Good morning, everybody, and welcome to May 2022. May 2nd, as a matter of fact. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on a beautiful day, though a little chilly here in Maine. I hope it's nicer in Connecticut. A little warmer anyway. It's bright and sunny here where we are going today to Meriden, Connecticut, as a matter of fact, to talk to Superintendent of Schools down there, our good friend Dr. Mark Benigni, and his best pal in the whole world, Barb Hefner, who is his Assistant Superintendent for Teaching and Innovation. And we're going to talk about the book they wrote with another colleague down there. Her name is Lois Lehman, but she is not here today. She's their Grants and Special Programs Administrator. I don't think Lois is here at any rate, but I know Barb and Mark are. The book is called The Great Equalizer: 6 Strategies to Make Public Education Work in America. All right. And it talks about leading a district with a school poised for state takeover and a district with growing inequalities and increasing student needs and making it all work. So we're going to talk about the book with the actual authors who happen to be good friends of ours here, okay, at Education Talk Radio. I'll bring them on in just a second. We're going to archive the show at ace-ed.org. I'm happy to say we're putting up a new issue of our magazine, Equity and Access. That'll be up, I think, today, okay? I just talked to the full staff down in Florida, and I think it's going to be up there. It might even be up there now as I speak. So if you go to ace-ed.org, you'll be able to check out not only all our old editions, but the brand new May issue, the May-June, is out right on time. Okay, so please check it out at ace-ed.org. We archive this podcast and all of our podcasts over there. We have a link to our new website with something we are very concerned about, which we call Teacher Retention and Recruitment. Teacher-retention.com, but there's a link at ace-ed.org. And also, please go over there, check it out. This is really important stuff. And also our other website, informational, which is SEL, Social Emotional Learning, SELtoday.org. And it's all over at ace-ed.org. Have I mixed you up enough with the .orgs and everything? Okay, ace-ed.org. It is all there. And without further ado, let me bring on Dr. Mark Benigni and the amazing Barb Hefner. Hi, Barb. I'll go first, ladies first. Hi, Barb.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine. Happy. It's a beautiful day here, and I'm just watching out my window, wishing the leaves would, or the trees would bloom. How are we doing down in Meriden? Barb,
well,
how are we doing
cool
down there?
We have rain here.
Oh, well. Do you have leaves on the trees yet?
We do. We even have flowers.
Jakes, we don't have anything up here yet. It's ridiculous. I'm only 2 hours, maybe 3.5 hours up north of you, for goodness sakes. Mark, how you doing, buddy? Mark Benigni.
I'm doing great. How you doing, Larry?
I'm all right for a Monday morning. I got to tell you, I'm all right. Is Lois with us today?
No, she's not. She's not with us today.
Okay. I just wanted to give her full credit since she was helpful to you in writing the book. Am I correct? She's one of your co-authors, right?
Yeah, she's one of our co-authors and just a great woman who's done so many great things for the Meriden Public Schools and the students and families we serve, and the best editor you could possibly have.
Wow, that's saying something right there off the bat. And, you know, Mark, I'm going to ask you, I read right off the website the description. I'm going to read it again. The book is called The Great Equalizer, 6 Strategies to Make Public Education Work. It's available from Roman and Littlefield, but you can also just Google it, go to Amazon, The Great Equalizer. Okay? It delves into the bleak reality, I'm using your words, of leading a district with a school poised for state takeover and a district with growing inequalities and increasing student needs. Now, you guys are 2 of the happiest people I know, and you're 2 of the most successful people I know in education, but the word bleak stood out to me. Okay, so talk to me about why the book is labeled like that, and just give us an overview of what The Great Equalizer is all about. And I'll start with the amazing Dr. Benigni, who, by the way, okay, in 2020, was named Nation's Empowered Digital Superintendent of the Year by my good friends at both COSIN and AASA. Right, Mark?
Yes. Thanks so much for bringing that up. And a great honor,
yeah, no
but
problem.
It's really, I represent the work of this terrific district. So it was a bleak time.
Yeah, Mark, you may say that, but I know it's all you. No one else works at the district. Everything flows through
right.
you. Okay, and I know this. And you said
you're right. You saw Barb taking a nap one time. Huh?
Right. There's a golden throne. If I'm not mistaken, there's a golden throne upon which you ascend every morning. Okay? And throw memos out. Is that correct? All by yourself. Is that correct? Okay. Right.
So
yes.
it is.
Go ahead. I'm only kidding.
When I came,
talk about
so
it.
When I came to
yeah.
district, this is year 13. It's amazing. And Barb
I
and I have worked together
yeah, wow.
for all those years. And the bleak reality was that we were a district undergoing immense change. So they were looking for a superintendent, assistant superintendent, and a personnel director. And my personal assistant shattered her leg in an accident at her home. So it was a crazy time here. I'd like to think I was smiling and enjoying it as much, but it was a bleak time for the district. We had one of our elementary schools that the state was getting close to taking that school
wow.
over. I remember going with a former union president, Aaron Benham, at the time, talking to the staff and saying, look it, we're on our last leg here. Either we're going to be committed to come up with a plan that can work and change student outcomes, or you're no longer going to work for me. You're going to work for the state.
Right. Wow.
We made
wow.
some hard changes there. Some folks were on board and definitely wanted the change. Others probably thought, well, you know what, I was thinking of retirement, or you know what, I was thinking of changing roles and left. So what we did is we were committed to trying to make this work, and we knew that we had some things in place. We were a one-to-one district. We had access available. We were transitioning to single sign-on. We had digital content partners that we felt could engage, personalize the learning for students, and really allow our teachers then to do that guided math and reading instruction. So the digital content kept students engaged, challenged at their own level, while teachers really invested in the guided direct reading instruction. And in 2017, that same school was a model school by the International Center for Leadership and Education, and really
wow.
Became one of our higher performing elementary schools. The principal at the
wow.
school won a Terrell Bell Award award. It's just a model of how when you're committed to working together with students, family, and staff, and you embrace technology, and some of the same themes that we have in the book here were critical there at the school as well. And I think what was remarkable about that is, look, nothing changed with the student population. We
yeah,
didn't
yeah,
all of a
yeah,
sudden
yeah.
make it a magnet school. It
yeah.
was the same students and families. We just changed our approach, and it worked out for kids.
Isn't that amazing that you can do it? Barb, that's great. Congratulations. That's a great way to preface all this, I got to tell you, Mark. And Barb, tell us about Meriden, the school district, the town, et cetera, the demographics, so people understand what we're talking about here. And it's a great place, by the way. Barb.
Sure. So we're a small urban center located in central Connecticut. We're halfway between New York and Boston, for those who are familiar with the East Coast. We have 13 schools.
And if I may, you are all Patriots and Red Sox and Celtics fans. We can, because you're right in between the two, so I know that you
Ooh.
Lean that way. Thank you. We can move on now.
Or
okay, go ahead.
We're Yankees and Jets fans, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
We're right on the line.
Okay, I know. I'm concerned here. We might have to cut the show short, but go ahead. Go ahead.
So we have two high schools, three middle schools, eight elementary
wow.
schools. We're 77% free and reduced lunch. We are
yeah.
almost 20% special education and 75%
really?
non-students of color.
Wow. I didn't know about special education. That's something, I got to tell you. Okay. Hey, so you're just a good old district. Okay, with a lot of diversity in there. Okay, and it's just wonderful when I hear about that and all the success you have had, et cetera, et cetera. All right. Barb, where did you, before you went to Meriden, or were you there when Mark arrived, or did you come along with him? What's the story there? Where were you before?
So the short story is I was in the elementary classroom for 11 years. I went to one of the regional centers for 11 years where I did educational technology professional development throughout the state.
I didn't know that.
Mark came to Meriden in July, and I followed shortly in September, but I didn't meet Mark until I came to Meriden.
Well, so you were 11 years in the classroom, if I got this right, 11 years at the ESA, Educational Service Agency. I've done the math. You started when you were 7 years old. Is that correct?
Exactly, Larry. Exactly. And 13 years here.
There you go. 7 years old. That makes sense now. I got it. Okay. Good enough. All right. Mark, where were you before? Before you came to Meriden?
So I was, I began my teaching career actually here. I taught special education in Meriden. Then I was an assistant principal. Yep. Assistant principal in Berlin, Connecticut, and then principal in Cromwell, Connecticut, a high school principal, before coming here to Meriden.
Wow. Wow, that's interesting. I mean, by the way, I didn't know you were a special ed teacher. No wonder you have the patience of a saint. You're amazing. Okay, they won't.
I'm not so sure I do, Larry, but I'll take it.
I'm
going
to tell you the truth, man. I say this, and I mean it. All special ed teachers go to heaven. I do mean that. They are. You're something else, I got to tell you. I don't know where you guys find the patience and the heart and the expertise to do what you do. I did not know that, all right? So with all that said, okay, you've got this same – Barb just described the student body, okay? And we'll just assume that was the student body when all this started, all right? What did you do to make it work? And you mentioned something, and I wrote it down. You mentioned you had a good people, they're good principal, but – as you said, the word personnel director as well, okay? And that's becoming more and more of an important position these days, especially with all the word about teacher retention and recruitment. I'm curious, what was there when you started, and what were the changes that you guys made? What'd you do?
Because
doing that, well, I guess I've got to finish this. The district you described, the school you described, is too typical a school these days in an urban setting, okay? And there are schools that can have kids failing. And yet you took the same kids and you made it all work, all right? And so we got to extrapolate that out to the rest of the world, which, of course, is the point of the book, okay? We can make this work if we put our mind to it, okay? So what was it like right then? And when you looked at it as a new superintendent, what'd you do? Talk to me.
So,
Mark.
So the first thing I did is, so the superintendent search was further behind the others. So the district was close to hiring an assistant superintendent and a personnel director before they hired a superintendent. So what I said to them when I was a selected candidate is I said, I'll interview whoever you have, but I need to choose those people.
Yeah.
And they did agree, and I did interview folks, but I think what some thought I needed as a, you know, a young, not a seasoned superintendent was very experienced people. What I wanted was innovative people. People who were going to think outside the box. People who were going to wake up every day with a positive attitude. People who weren't afraid to make a mistake but weren't afraid to try new things. So I wanted a completely opposite thing than maybe some thought would benefit me. So hiring. And my first hire was Mike Grove, who was the district's tech director for years. And, you know, I knew because when I got here, I would talk to folks, and everyone had wonderful things to say about Mike. And I said, look, as a tech director, you work with everyone. You work with food service. You work with the custodial and maintenance department. You work with the curriculum director. So I knew he had experience working with everyone. Everyone had great things to share there. For the personnel director, I wanted someone who was going to modernize how we hired folks, you know, video conferencing, and really look at the hiring process as one of the most important critical components of the district.
Good for you.
Brought in
for you.
A person who could do that. probably the
and we're
most
talking
important
about, and the year we're talking about is like 2010, 2009, 2010?
Yeah, 2009, yeah, right?
Okay,
yeah, 2009.
Yep.
And probably the most important thing I did, and look, at Barb and others are much more tech-savvy than I am, but I recognize the benefits technology can play in learning, but also in district operations, just in efficiencies and how we move the district. So the CTO, our chief technology officer position, could not be isolated from curriculum and teaching and learning. It needed to be a part of our operation. They needed to meet weekly with us at our core cabinet meeting. So by elevating that position, it was clear that technology was going to play a key role in how we move this district forward.
Right, right. So what'd you do?
So I hired Barb Hafner, and the rest is history.
Smart move.
And I haven't been able to sleep one night since.
You know, actually, you made a very good point, though, okay? I am a big fan of Ed Service Agencies, okay? And, Barb, that's where you were working. You called it a regional center, but that's an Ed Service Agency in Connecticut, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, I'm a big fan of them. And for Mark to steal you away from there, but you are so good at your job, and it just shows the value to me, okay, of that – that mid-level, so to speak, the great vast middle school of the educational institutions, okay, that everybody kind of forgets about but are so damn important, okay, and him grabbing you away is incredible. So what did you do, Barb, when you looked at this situation? What'd you do, okay, and how did it affect this particular elementary school?
So when I left my position at the regional center, I had a strong passion for integrating technology into the classroom, not as a standalone unit or not as an extra. And for any district to have success, it just had to be the way that they
Agreed.
Did business. And having
Agreed.
Worked at many districts throughout the state, I work closely with Meriden, but I also knew they were well poised to take the next step. So it was an exciting opportunity to be able to come here, knowing what they had in place and knowing where they could go. The unique thing about Meriden is whenever you would come to district, and consultants still say this today, teachers and administrators are willing to try anything. You could walk in and say, I have this idea. What do you think? Everyone is very good about, hey, we'll give it a try. If it works, it's a bonus for students and teachers. If it doesn't, we chalk it up to experience, learn from it, and move on. So when I came in is when we first started to go one-to-one with technology, and we really looked at our digital content, what we had and what we were looking to purchase. And we were looking for vendors that were true partners with us. It wasn't just buying a piece of software, but it was how could the software support the core curriculum? What type of data points did it provide? How easy was it for teachers to use? If it was a steep learning curve, teachers don't have a lot of time in their day or weeks to spend a lot of time learning. So it had to be user-friendly. And over time, we put these pieces in place. One of our elementary schools was one of the first teams on board. And again, having teachers who were willing to take risks, try new things, having administrators willing to support them is really what made it key and successful, which we've been able to move forward and carry on throughout the district.
It's really something what you guys have done. And I want to focus again on this one elementary school, okay? As you and Barb, stay with me. As you made the changes there, okay? Well, let me ask it a different way. Why was that school failing? What was going on at that school? Because it sounds to me like the rest of the schools were doing okay. There must have been something going on. What was going on? Without naming names or anything like that.
No, I think generally low expectations for students. We set the bar too low. We thought caring about kids meant coddling them, not challenging them with rigorous coursework. And I think, quite honestly, some staff had just been defeated. They felt year after year of low test scores, year after year of students not making state benchmarks. They felt defeated. And so the way they did is they wrapped their arms around the kids. They loved them a lot, but they didn't challenge them in the classroom. And that's what I think we did. And really, it was that what we did at that one elementary school really was how we moved this district forward. And basically, the six strategies we used there are what we've used to move Meriden Public Schools forward as well.
And
Larry,
and
one other piece that I'll add, the family partnerships that we developed at that school.
Oh, nice.
So they were undergoing a lot of change, and it's important to have families involved. But the school did things like back-to-school barbecue where the families would be able to come. They did a mommy and me night once a month where a student and a mom or a female figure, they did a daddy and me night, same idea. So the families became so involved in that school community. That was just another level of support, as well as our community partners. Students were able to go to gymnastic lessons and swimming lessons, and that was incorporated into their school day on a rotating basis. The logistics were all handled by someone else. But students had experiences that families were not able to provide to them just because of working schedules and transportation,
sure,
and all those things would get in the way. But the school really became a hub of excitement, of clear expectations,
wow,
and high expectations for all students. And, you know, community involvement and family involvement was also key.
And transparency in data, Larry. We were super data-driven. We knew which students needed us the most and needed the most support, and we knew which learners needed to be challenged. And all of our decisions were made with data in hand. So staff understood clearly what direction,
yeah,
we were going in.
And why you were doing it. I mean, it's just so obvious. Okay, and that's, I always say data is so important. Everybody knows that now. It's just so incredible. For too long, we worked without it. Mark, why did you call the book The Great Equalizer? What does that refer to within the book?
So, I mean, I just believe that American public education, despite all the negative press around it, all the difficulty our teachers are facing, it truly is the great equalizer. And for me, neither of my parents went to college. My mom and dad, my dad has since passed. They married, my dad was 18, my mom was 19. They had nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a third floor apartment, but they had a love for each other and a dream for me and my two brothers. And education gave me every opportunity in life, and it was public education. And I still believe that it can be the great equalizer for all students. And I want to make sure that we get that message out there and that we don't lose sight that what makes this country special is how we handle public education.
I couldn't agree with you more. Okay, so on that note, I'll ask Barb, what do you see as the future, Mark, of public education? Because we've lost sight of that to a great extent. America has lost sight of that. They like their own public schools, but look down on others. Okay, and there's a movement, as you know. I mean, it's in the back of people's minds. We should destroy this great public education system. Okay, it doesn't even make sense to me. Okay, so talk to me about what's your thoughts about the future of all this, Mark Benigni?
So I think the future of public education still is very strong. I think this pandemic showed us, and despite all the press about 2 years of lost learning, I could show you all of our internal data. Our students didn't lose 2 years, whether they chose
in-person
or remote learning.
That's right. I agree. I don't even know them. Yeah.
They didn't lose. They didn't lose those 2 years. So I think the future of public education is still very, very strong. I think public schools are becoming more and more innovative and creative, as they should. I mean, let's own some of this. We need to be able, as public schools, to take chances, take risks, try new things, not be so stuck in our own ways, to not invest in others. But what I've seen happen is even some of the private foundations and philanthropists are investing in public schools that are innovative and creative. And some of the partners that we have that have invested financially in our district, in our work, had traditionally and typically worked only with the charter network or private schools.
Right.
And I think
right.
what we're seeing is good education is good education, and it doesn't matter where it is. Those districts that are willing to embrace innovation are going to be public schools that survive and thrive in the future.
I couldn't agree with you more. Barb, what are your thoughts? Barb Hafner.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with what Mark said. And, you know, that innovative piece is really going to be key. Technology is here to stay. It's no longer should we or what if we did.
Yeah.
So technology and access are key for all students. It's a learning tool like one time the pencil and the ruler was. And so
exactly.
Education in that respect in public schools, you know, have to continue to adapt. It's not only in the classroom from 8 to 2 every day. Online opportunities and experiences for students and teachers are key in order to meet students and teachers where they're at and to expand learning beyond classroom walls and beyond the traditional school day, school year.
Yeah, we just have to do this. I mean, it's just we just have to see and change it. And Mark said it a minute ago, you got to think out of the box with all this sort of stuff. And on that note, Mark, as you bring people into the district now, do you find that the, and I know you work with the education schools in Connecticut and New York and all that sort of thing, are they training teachers to really think outside the box and understand what's going on in the profession these days? What are you finding as you hire these days?
I think when we're hiring, they're definitely much more tech-ready than teachers used to be. So I think they're getting the technology side of it.
Yeah.
I think they're doing a good job of getting teachers to understand the importance of building those personal connections with students. And look, you could have 20 students, 18 of them, it just works for. It's how do you build connections with those other two that maybe you're just
right.
you're not seeming to engage. I think they're doing a great job there. But I think there's still this mentality that trying something that doesn't work is a bad thing. And we look at trying something new is always a good thing.
Yep.
Keeping doing something that doesn't work is a bad thing, but try new things because you never know what's going to engage and make a difference for students. Just don't keep doing something that's not working.
Yeah, you know, and I'm glad you said what you said a few minutes ago about so-called learning loss. And I have been arguing that since the pandemic, sort of started the middle and towards the end here. I honestly believe, and Barb, you can chime in on this, okay? People are mixing up learning loss with curriculum loss, okay? We may not have been able to cover the entire curriculum, okay? But kids still learned, okay? And they learned well, and teachers did a good job of teaching, okay? And yet it was a crazy time, but you can't mix up the two things. The kids learned. Okay, and that's thanks to teachers that made that happen. What are your thoughts on my statement there, Barb? Do you agree with me? The learning loss line is classic. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Teachers have been working hard and continue to work hard, and the pandemic really shifted the way that they did things, but they still covered curriculum. And because their schedules may have changed due to was quarantined, they were quarantined, they couldn't cover as much curriculum in some cases, but we didn't, it wasn't that teaching stopped. It looked different. It felt different. And in district, we noticed that our youngest learners struggle the most online, which is understandable. It could be a long day online. An hour could be a long time online learning
for
the students. But that was the best option at the time, and it was a way to keep students engaged in learning. But, we've learned from our online experiences. We know in our upper grades that it was strong and where we can offer opportunities there. And then we know where there's a place for students to be in person and in the classroom.
Yep. It's just, hopefully we'll learn about all this and come up. Over the course of as you were writing the book, Barb, what was your favorite story as you were writing the book, the favorite thing that came to mind as you wrote?
Well, I like capturing the work that's been done in the district because I think it's very could be replicated by any district. We're not a district that receives a ton of funding, so it's very practical. There are many stories about Mark in the book, so I will let him select one. We also write about Secretary Cardona, who was one of our former colleagues.
Thank you. That's right.
Wait
a minute, Barb, don't just let that pass. Don't take that a little more detailed. Go ahead, say it.
About
Secretary of Education Cardona. Yeah, Cardona.
Yes, he was a principal in the district. He was an assistant superintendent in the district. He moved on to the commissioner of education in Connecticut, and now he is the Secretary of Education. And we still call him a colleague and a friend.
He is a colleague and a friend. Right? He is a colleague and a friend of yours. Okay? And that's so cool. That's so cool. And Barb, he's warm in that seat for you, assistant superintendent. That used to be his job.
I'm not sure about that, but we're very happy for him. But we do write about his experience that he's shared with us many times about coming to public schools and not being an English speaker and what it was like to be an English language learner and how we overcame those hurdles.
And think about that, Secretary of Education of the United States. Think about that. Okay, pretty amazing.
Yeah,
okay,
very successful. Yep, if we hold the bar high for students, they can meet it, right?
If I may, the great equalizer. Okay, think about that. Okay, a young child who couldn't speak English, Secretary of Education of the United States. Okay, who's now an adult? He's no longer a child. Okay, it's amazing. Mark, what's your favorite story in the book?
So I love sharing the story about my dad, who has since passed. It was eighth grade, and I was at Lincoln Middle School here in Meriden, and you know, it's first day of school, excited, seeing all your friends, probably have a new pair of sneakers on, and it's fifth period, and I'm going to my fifth period class, and all my friends are going to algebra, and I'm going to grade eight math. And I'm like, why am I going to grade eight math? Why am I not with all my friends in algebra? So I get really upset. I go to the office, and I see the principal. I do what any teenage boy would do when they're upset. They call their mom. I call my mom, who proceeds to call my dad. And my dad's going to come to Lincoln. And while I'm waiting for my dad to arrive, now my dad works in a factory. Like, I don't even think he gets paid if he leaves work. So
of course
he doesn't leave work. He doesn't miss work, and he's on his way. So now I'm sitting on that bench, and I'm worried now, is my dad going to be mad at me? Is he going to think I'm being a baby here? Is he going to say, hey, is he going to lose his job? All these thoughts are going through my head, and my dad comes, and I just have this overwhelming feel of, like, joy and comfort when I see him. We go into the principal's office, and my dad's, we sit there, and the principal, my dad says, why is Mark so upset? Like, and why am I being called out of work? And, you know, you'll have to ask your son why he's so upset. And my dad, well, Mark, why are you so upset? I explained the story. You know, I had always done well in math, but I took a placement test or something, and I didn't do well on it, and so they're going to pigeonhole me into this grade eight math. And my dad looks at the principal and says, clear as day, says, Mark will be in Algebra 1 tomorrow, and I'm not leaving here until you make that happen.
Whoa,
so the principal,
whoa, good old
exits
dad.
The
whoa.
Room,
whoa.
Exits the room, I'm sure today, probably to call the superintendent. The next day, I'm in Algebra 1, and the A I received in that class, meaningless, because I would be so afraid of letting my dad down. But at that moment, it told me two things. It told me, number one, we don't set limits on children, and you weren't going to do that to me, and I'm not going to do that to any student who I work with. So don't set limits on children. Let them challenge themselves. And number two, it taught me that, geez, everyone needs an advocate. So not every student comes to our school with a dad who will come and advocate for them. We need to be advocates for those kids that don't have that support.
Wow, that is great. And also, if I might, I'll just take your story one step further. Okay, you really got to listen to the parents. Okay, they know their kids. They know their kids. Okay, it's that simple. And Mark, I didn't realize you went to Meriden Schools. I never knew that.
Yep. I'm a public school guy through and through, a Meriden guy. I'm surprised you hadn't heard, I'm sure, because Barb likes to give you a hard time.
But I didn't know it. Wow, I didn't remember. Okay, congratulations. Look at you. You're like a mini Dr. Cardona. Okay? you went from a kid in general math to superintendent of the school district in the same district.
Unbelievable.
You're like, the great equalizer, public education. It's a great book. Six strategies to make public education work in America. Mark and Barb are here. Lois, sorry you couldn't be here. You guys are the best down in Meriden. Okay, we'll do more together. Okay, we got to go.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Larry. Always good to chat.
I feel the same way about it from this end. Okay, take care, guys. Enjoy spring if it ever gets here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye, Mark and Barb. That's Superintendent Mark Benigni, Assistant Superintendent Barb Hefter, Meriden Public Schools, one of my favorite districts. The book is called The Great Equalizer. Check it out. Making public, six strategies to make public education work in America. It can be done everywhere. It's being done everywhere. All right, we'll archive over at ace-ed.org. Check out what we're doing over there. All right, my name is Larry Jacobs. Can't thank you enough for being here. Have a great day.